Hello, Internet. This is Ewan Spence, ESC Insight, and Eurovision again, calling from Malmo. Join us as we join Eurovision again once more to travel to Malmo, but this time in 1992. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome to another companion podcast from ESC Insight. Sit alongside the work of Eurovision again and the official YouTube channel. They're going to go back in time to go to 1992 and simul-watch the Eurovision Song Contest from that year on the official channel, youtube.com/Eurovision. All of you joining in with hashtag Eurovision again on Twitter, and a bit more background from us here at ESC Insight. It is, of course, the first of two times that we've travelled to Malmo, and it's also the second time we've travelled to Malmo at Eurovision again. But this is the first time, the first year, the one with a great big ship on the stage. It's also the year of Christer Björkman singing for Sweden, something that he is still very, very proud of. It's also the year of Linda Martin, who to this day still has to put up with her victory being hijacked by someone wanting to claim a third trophy. As with previous editions, we've partnered with Eurovision again. We're going to bring you this companion podcast with the music of the day, national final stories, memories, and more. Coming up, we've got the state of pop. We're going to look at some of the songs from the national selections, and we're going to look at the final appearance of Yugoslavia in the contest. But first, a quick look at the rulebook. And to be fair, when we look at the addendum for 1992, not much has changed, it has to be said. Nobody debuted, by the way, but Netherlands did return to the contest, which gave us the largest entry list to date, 23 countries appearing in Malmo. And yes, we're in a period of relative stability for the contest and the contest rules. Scoring is still 100% jury. The classic 1 to 8, 10, 12 points still in play to determine the winner. Given the excitement of Rome 1991 and the fun at the end of that contest with the tiebreaker rules to apply, we're pretty sure that the Swedish hosts Lydia Capolcio and Harald Schreutiger sat down and read the rulebook as closely as someone reading All's Well That Ends Well before taking to the stage at the Royal Shakespeare Company. Other firsts include the first French song not 100% sung in French. Calais Mon La Rive includes lyrics both in French and Haitian Creole. But outside of that, the charts, the music, 1992 saw tastes in flux. Over to AJ Clay and the state of pop.
In 1992, the UK charts were a pleasing mix of genres after the devastation caused by the previous year's outbreak of Bryan Adams that infected the top spot for 4 months. Nottingham's KWS took the 9th of May top spot with a cover of Casey and the Sunshine Band's Please Don't Go in a double A-side with Game Boy, a hardcore rave tribute to the must-have early 90s console. Just pipped to the post was the breakbeat hardcore group SL2 with the iconic On a Ragga Tip. Soft Cell's Mark Almond held the number 4 spot with a spirited cover of David McWilliams' The Days of Pearly Spencer. While Mark hasn't dipped his toes into Eurovision yet, in 2000 he moved to Russia to record Heart on Snow, an album of traditional romance and folk songs. And as part of this, he collaborated with Ilya Lagutenko from Mumy Troll. You'll remember them as Russia's 2001 representatives, bringing the chilled indie rock Lady Alpine Blue. Gloomy goth rockers as Sisters of Mercy, as part of promoting the grimly inevitable compilation album, re-released Temple of Love, and performed on Top of the Pops that year with backing vocals from Ofra Haza. Sometimes known as the Israeli Madonna, she came second in the 1983 song contest with High. Easy Listening dominated the lower rungs of the top 10. The luxuriantly maned Curtis Stigers insisted You're All That Matters to Me, while the artist formerly known as Curiosity Killed the Cat had a lukewarm cover of Hang On In There Baby, not Ben Vollevan Parrott's finest hour. And Dutch one-hit wonders Ten Sharp brought their piano-heavy pop ballad You, with the kind of melody that plays underneath an apology for the loss of broadcasting on BBC One. Metallica single-handedly represented heavy metal at number 6 with Nothing Else Matters. They might not be the obvious candidates for an ESC 6 Degrees of Separation, but they covered The Ecstasy of Gold for an Ennio Morricone tribute album. Ennio arranged a live version of Tu Sei Romantica, Italy's 1960 Eurovision entry by Renato Rascel, and arranged and conducted the 1964 Sanremo entry Ieri ho incontrato mia madre by Gino Paoli. Enter Sanremo, man. As always, the UK album chart had a spate of cash-in greatest hits compilations. Some Girls Wander By Mistake, the Sisters of Mercy's early singles, was at number 5, while Madness brought Divine Madness to the number 7 spot. The band had just reformed in 1991 and performed at their Madstock festival that summer. Bearded Texan rocker ZZ Top's Best Of was at number 8, featuring the great Dusty Hill on bass, who we lost recently. Lady in Red crooner Chris de Burgh held the number 3 spot with Power of 10, while ex-Eurythmics singer Annie Lennox's debut solo album Diva claimed number 2. And bringing more goth to the top 10 were Crawley Legends' The Cure with Wish, featuring the uncharacteristically upbeat Friday I'm in Love. Soul to Souls Volume 3 was just right at number 10, but topping the charts was Mick Hucknall's pop soul behemoth Simply Red. The album Stars would spawn the title track, For Your Babies and Something Got Me Started. It wasn't quite Adamsmageddon outside the UK, but one act did crush the opposition across Europe. American glam metal act Mr. Big. Their softer acoustic-driven sing-along to Be With You topped the charts in Belgium, Sweden, Switzerland, Denmark, Norway, Germany and the Netherlands. It could be worse. The Irish record-buying public chose Deeply Dippy by Right Said Fred as their number one, and the less said about their views on the current situation, the better. Meanwhile in France, 80s singer François Feldman's ode to his daughter, Joy, was number one, and it's a considerably peppier song than Mr. Big's. But over in Spain is a song that may be familiar from earlier. Double U hit the top spot with Please Don't Go. KWS's UK hit was in fact a soundalike cover of Double U's cover after the record company was unable to secure distribution rights for the Italian Eurodance Act's version. Inevitably, this led to legal action and compensation to W's producer Roberto Zanetti. KWS would later claim their version was a homage to Nottingham Forest footballer Des Walker, who was about to sign with Italian club Sampdoria. Speaking of covers, ZZ Top had Finland boogieing to Viva Las Vegas, which would later appear in Beavis and Butthead and The Big Lebowski. In Italy, Annie Lennox was asking us, why? While she's not appeared at Eurovision, more's the pity, her ex-bandmate Dave Stewart has worked on records with Russia's Tattoo from 2003 and Anavisi, representing Greece in 1980 and 2006 and Cyprus in 1982. There was some more high BPM solace amidst the soft balladry, though. In Austria, U96 featured a techno version of the theme from the film Das Boot. Alex Christensen from the group would go on to represent Germany in 2009, alongside Oscar Loya as Alex Swings, Oscar Sings, with the eye-popping Miss Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And that was the state of pop.
In AJ Clay there and the state of pop. And now over to me for the state of the national finals. Let's start with the United Kingdom, because after the contest, Michael Ball's oft quoted, "I'd rather stick needles in my eyes than do Eurovision again," continues to feel out of place. Yeah, it was just second place. The UK was rather good at getting second place when it had the advantage of being one of only three countries who could sing in English. But Ball's 1992 was a big year. He released his first album, which went to number one, went on tour, got that worldwide appearance on the Eurovision stage, got multiple appearances on Wogan, the UK chat show early evening that stormed up the ratings to showcase all of the songs. Plus, he got his own primetime national final where he sang all the songs because he was definitely going. And out of those songs, included a song called "This Is the Moment I've Been Waiting For," notable as the final national final song submitted by legendary writer Paul Curtis. So, all in all, second place at Eurovision, great year. Those are some pretty nice needles. Okay, Switzerland. Switzerland saw Geraldine Oliver win with the song "Soleil Soleil," but she didn't sing it at the contest. Having submitted the song to the French language broadcaster in Switzerland, the song was rejected. So it was translated into German, and then it was submitted to the German-speaking broadcaster. Nobody noticed until it won. And then it was just like, hold on, cunning, but no. Second place, Daisy Ovray, took Mr. Music Man to Malmo instead. Germany saw our old friends Ralf Siegel and Bernd Mayunger trying to work their magic with Lena once more. Nope, that Lena, the Lena who finished second in 1981 with Johnny Blue, a song which was composed by, you guessed it, Ralf Siegel and Bernd Mayunger. It was not to be. Lena was beaten by the band Win with their song "Trom Sin für alle da," written by, yep, you've guessed it, Ralf Siegel and Bert Mayunger. A couple of quick cuts. Malta's national final included the song "Je Collecte Dal Claim" by Renato, whose only claim to fame is that he was not the Renato of Rennie and Renato that had their UK Christmas smash hit "Save Your Love." Following the Dutch group Fizzle Sizzle at Eurovision 1986, we had band member Laura Vasblom in the Dutch national final, got second place there behind Humphrey Campbell, so no return to the contest there. Just one thing about Sweden, yes, we all look at Christer Björkman's finishing place at Eurovision, but let's not forget, he did win Melody Festivalen, yeah? Right. Finally, though, Italy's entry, an internal selection by broadcaster RAI here, who invited back Mia Martini to sing for Italy at the contest. She'd sung in 1977 with Libera, which finished in 13th place. The internal selection was a song called "Rhapsodia," which, to my ears, is one of the most beautiful songs ever at the Eurovision Song Contest. That would finish fourth. And Paul Sanremo wasn't in play that year to select the song contest song or the singer. Martini had entered Sanremo in 1992, and she finished in second place with "Gliomini non cambiano." Da sola gli uomini ti cambiano, e tu piangi mille notti di perché. Invece Mia Martini there with the Sanremo second place song "Gliomino non cambiano." Right, over now to Finn Ross-Russell with his Eurovision time machine, and this month, Yugoslavia.
The 1992 Eurovision Song Contest is a historic one for many reasons. Linda Martin became the oldest woman ever to win the Eurovision Song Contest. The competition became bigger than ever before, with 23 competing nations. But perhaps the most momentous milestone of Malmö 1992 is that it was the last ever appearance of Yugoslavia at the contest. The nation had provided the contest with many positive memories over its 27 total appearances, including fourth place finishes in 1962, 1983, and 1987, before finally securing its sole victory in Lausanne 1989 with "Riva" and "Rock Me." But how did we get to this point? The beginning of the end for Yugoslavia as a nation could be placed at a number of different historical moments. The most commonly used is May 4th, 1980, when Yugoslav leader Josip Broz Tito died at the age of 87. He was replaced by a 9-person committee with one member representing each Yugoslav province, alongside the leader of the Yugoslav Communist Party. Over the subsequent decade, small events, actions and declarations cropped up all across the country in support of free speech, constitutional reform and workers' rights. Desperate to cling on to power, in 1988, Slobodan Milosevic, leader of the Communist Party of Serbia, began a campaign to provoke civil unrest in other Yugoslav provinces in order to force existing governments to resign and be replaced by more favourable figures. This process started in Vojvodina before moving to Kosovo and Montenegro. This, combined with the decision to remove the leader of the Yugoslav Communist Party from the Central Committee and the decision to reform the Serbian constitution to strip Vojvodina and Kosovo of their autonomy, meant that Milosevic now had 4 of the 7 committee seats loyal to him. The direction of travel was clear. Just over a year after Zagreb had hosted the Eurovision Song Contest in 1990, Slovenia declared independence, followed later in the year by Macedonia. Croatia would declare independence that same year, but this would be complicated by the large presence of ethnic Serbs in the area, who rebelled with support from the central Yugoslav government in Belgrade. Conflict would also befall Bosnia-Herzegovina when they declared independence in March 1992, with their own resident Serbian population reacting violently towards the country's Muslim majority. All of this put an interesting cloud over Jugovicija 1992, the final ever edition of the Yugoslav national selection, held in Belgrade on March 28th. Bosnian artists competed despite their nation having just declared independence. The winning act was Serbian singer Extra Nena with her accordion-tinted ballad Ljubim te Pesama, the first song representing Yugoslavia to be performed in Serbian. The curtain would officially come down on socialist Yugoslavia on April 27, 1992, when the two remaining republics would form the democratic multi-party Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. This meant that by the time the contest came around on May 9, 1992, Extra Nena was technically representing a different country to the one she had initially won the ticket for, the only time this has happened in Eurovision history. She would finish 13th in Malmö, which would be a much better result than the one coming from the United Nations on May 30th, when the full extent of sanctions against Yugoslavia was revealed, including a ban from participating in the Eurovision Song Contest. They would return to the contest in 2004 as Serbia and Montenegro. As for the other Yugoslav nations, Slovenia, Croatia and Bosnia and Herzegovina would make their debuts the following year at Mill Street 1993, with North Macedonia following at Birmingham 1998 and Serbia and Montenegro competing for the first time as independent nations at Helsinki 2007. The debuts of each of these countries have separately brought special music, moments, and memories to the competition we love, with an incredible amount of socio-political context. But those are stories for another day.
Finn Ross Russell there with a look back at Yugoslavia's last entry into the song contest. Thank you also to AJ Clay for the State of Pop. Thank you all out there for listening. Thank you to the Eurovision Again team for letting us put together the companion podcast, and of course the official Eurovision website team for doing all the restoration, SVT for giving permission for the 1992 contest to be re-aired, all of that and more. It's great to have your company over the summer months. September the 1st is lurking there, so we'll be into the off-season. We'll be out of the off-season and into the on-season. Jeez, that's complicated. In the next couple of weeks. But Eurovision Again will be continuing over the next few months as well. So we'll have another companion podcast to join whatever year we will be watching next month. We'll see you then. In the meantime, we're still doing a weekly news podcast. We'll be looking at that September 1st deadline. All that and more up on the website, esinsight.com. And you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook as well. Right then. I'm going to watch 1992 again. Again! You be kind to everybody else out there. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Ta-ra for now. Guitars, please. You've been listening to AC Insight's Eurovision Again companion podcast for Malmö 1992. Hosted by Ewan Spence. Written by Ewan Spence, AJ Clay and Finn Ross Russell.